Hello and welcome to Inside Business with Ciarán Hancock, a podcast from the Irish Times. Later in the show, I'll be joined by Kieran Lucid, the millionaire Kerry entrepreneur, who'll be telling me about his vision for an all-Ireland football league. How will it work? Who will fund it? And how much extra money might the clubs on both sides of the border make from this new venture? But first, I'm joined by Peter Hamilton for a roundup of some of the major business stories of the week. Peter, this is going to be our last roundup before Christmas, so let's make it a good one. And we're going to start with the central bank's rather cheery report on motor insurance.
That's right. It was fairly damning where the insurance industry was concerned. What they found, some of the headline figures were that the cost of insurance claims were down 2.5% between 2009 and 2018, but premiums were up 42%. So fairly significant if you're insuring your car, home, health, whatever it may be. They also found that insurers made an average of 9% profit last year, and that compares to the UK where it was just 5%. So this research is
sort of creaming it.
They're doing well. They're doing well. Now, they had a few tough years, there's no doubt, but they're now back to fairly nice profitability. And this comes after their long-standing claims that the higher cost of insurance is because of these spiralling payouts.
Compo culture, I think they
this
call it.
Compo culture, exactly. Which doesn't really seem to exist to the same extent that they have been suggesting. We've seen, obviously, some bad negative stories over the past number of years, but not to the extent that, they have been suggesting.
There's little by way of evidence, I think it's fair to say. Piers Doherty called them out on this.
That's right.
In the Oireachtas when he asked them how many cases they'd reported to the guards,
yes.
Cases of fraud. So they gave a figure for
and it
for
was single digits. So.
Fraud, yeah, and it was only a single digit number of cases.
That
so it didn't add up, essentially.
Now, you know, when you look at the past 5 years, the cost of claims has risen by 14%, but premiums in that time, again, 62% up. So pretty massive. You were, in your column today, made an interesting point that just 16% of the claims that have been settled through PIAB, the Personal Injury Assessment Board. And given that every claim has to go through PIAB, that's a rather unusual scenario. So that kind of tells us that the rest of the claims are going to litigation, and that is significantly more expensive, as that central bank report showed. The legal costs for a personal injuries case is about €14,684, and in PIAB it's just €753. So lawyers doing not too badly out of this either.
Yeah. And CCPC, Joe Brennan had a story this morning saying that the competition body here is at an advanced stage of its investigation, which was launched 3 years ago,
yeah,
whether motor insurers and brokers are engaged in anti-competitive practices. Tell us about that.
This is by signalling their price moves to the market. So they'll say, perhaps in the media, that we think premiums are going to go up, and that's that is price signalling under certain circumstances. So we still, I suppose, don't know when that is going to complete. It is one of two investigations. The European Commission last May started a formal investigation into whether the whether Insurance Ireland, the industry body, had been operating a cartel by restricting access to claims databases. Now, I think they have denied restricting access.
Yeah. What's your own experience, Peter? You're a motorist.
Yeah, my motor insurance had been steadily declining, but it increased last year and increased again slightly this year. So it is quite expensive. You know, it's I would obviously like it to go down, but even I shop around, and it's difficult. But I think Piers Doherty made the point that there's this dual pricing issue where you see different prices online, and when you ring up a broker or when you ring up the insurer, that is a problem, and that's tough to navigate around, I think, when you are looking for new insurance.
Yeah, yeah. They've obviously marked you as a speedster in your flash sports car, Peter.
Indeed.
Okay, let's talk about tourism. We've had some good years of recovery in tourism over the past few years after the recession and so forth. But a few concerns now being expressed by Tourism Ireland Chief Executive Niall Gibbons for next year.
That's right. He said that the organisation has detected momentum behind flight shaming. So this is where people are criticised for travelling by air for environmental reasons. And he also, interestingly, went as far as saying that green taxes on air travel is a threat. That's, I suppose, understandable given that 90% of inbound tourists here travel by air. But it was interesting that he went so far as to say that, because that seems to be what's on the horizon from a European level, that there will be some variety of
carbon
air travel
tax. Such.
Yeah, on air travel. So, but he said he was concerned over the impact of flight shaming.
He's particularly concerned about the German market, which is a very important market for us. And obviously Germans have the option of hopping on a train or going in their car and visiting other countries rather than getting on a plane to Ireland.
They have great accessibility, and when it comes to ferries here, we aren't terribly developed in that sphere. It's ferries to the UK and France and Spain in the summer, and that's about the height of it. So I suppose the ferry companies obviously do all right on those routes, but we haven't really developed that because all of our emphasis has been going into air travel. And look, Dublin Airport has fantastic figures this year. Another record year it will be by the looks of things. But tourism on the whole is
32 million in the past 12 months. Brexit, obviously, a potential negative there. We've seen the number of visitors from Britain going down steadily over the last wee while because of the decline in sterling against the value of euro, although sterling got a bit of a bounce from the Boris election win. So who knows where that's going to go, but Britain's a very important market. It's the single largest chunk of tourists who come here come from Britain.
It is, and they tend to stay, I think, for about a week, so that they're significant in that sense as well. And they tend to move out of Dublin, which is obviously important for the rural economy. So the figures overall seem to look like they're just going to rise about 1% this year. Not great growth, but still, you know, our numbers are still solid. There was a shred of good news this week, it should be said, for the industry. This morning, the Minister for Business, Heather Humphreys, said that all chef grades are eligible for employment permit. Now, up to now, commis chefs couldn't be employed here, and there was a cap on the number of chefs from outside of the European Union of 610 across the sector. So that has now been removed. And Folch Ireland said that'll very much help alleviate the skills shortage in the sector. Like, employment numbers are expected to jump quite significantly, almost to double to 310,000 by 2025. So this, for the sector at least, is a shred of positivity.
Yeah, sure. Okay, all right, back to aviation. And Boeing has decided to halt production of this 737 MAX jet that it's had so many problems with. Bad news for Ryanair.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they had been hoping for summer growth on the back of their enhanced fleet. So they've now had to pull back on some of that. Ryanair is one of the bigger customers of this MAX jet. They have orders for 135 and options for 75 more. So, look, I mean, it has been well flagged at this point. They are slightly concerned about summer growth. So, not hugely surprising. But the fact that Boeing has cut production altogether has been a concern for some of the aviation lessors. And there was one, Tim Aero Ireland, which is suing Boeing now in Chicago to void contracts for 22 jets, and they want €166 million in damages. So this is, a step change in what's happening in the Boeing saga.
And still no clarity as to when regulators might give the approval again.
No.
The green light for the MAX to begin flying again.
No, it had been flagged as perhaps January, but that date it's likely that that date will come and go. We don't know when it's going to be approved. Look, the fact that they've stopped construction or stopped production would suggest that they don't think it's coming anytime soon.
All right, Peter, would you be happy to fly in a MAX, one of the first MAXes up in the air once they do get the clearance?
I would imagine the first one will be the safest jet ever produced, so the first one I'll go on, maybe.
After that, you might be too worried.
I'll question it.
All right, okay. All right, Peter, we'll leave it there. Happy Christmas to you.
Thanks, Ciarán.
We're going to take a short break now. When we return, I'll be talking to Kieran Lucid, the millionaire Kerry entrepreneur, who'll be telling me about his vision for an All-Ireland Football League. Now, in a period that's been dogged by controversy for the governing body of football in Ireland, the FAI, what does the future hold for the domestic game? Kerry businessman Kieran Lucid has this year outlined ambitious plans for an All-Ireland League combining competitions both north and south of the border. And of course, south of the border is known as the League of Ireland. To talk to us a little bit more about his plans, I'm delighted to say that Kieran joins me in studio for Inside Business. Kieran, you're very welcome. Just tell us a little bit about your plan for an All-Ireland Football League.
So the plan really is just to reorganise domestic football on an all-island basis.
Mm.
So as you know, we have teams in the Republic and Derry forming the League of Ireland, and then the rest of the teams in Northern Ireland in the Irish League, as it's called. So it's my view, that it's a very small population to sustain two professional leagues or near professional leagues. And it makes financial sense, football sense, to merge them together and do it in such a way to preserve the independence of the national sides and the associations and the national.
So we'd have a combined North and South League, but on the international front, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland continue to do their own thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Northern Irish team, for example, are how do you say, it's sacrosanct. The Northern Irish fans have no desire, from what I've experienced speaking to them, to dissolve their national team, to lose that identity that the Northern Irish football team gives them. The rest of the sporting bodies like rugby, hockey, cricket are organised on an all-in basis. So the Northern Irish football team is probably the last bastion of their identity, I would say, in sporting terms. So the primary requirement here is that there would be no threat to the national sides.
You're not a League of Ireland man of old, are you? You're not somebody who's kind of been embedded in the League of Ireland for many, many years. And the League of Ireland isn't one of those institutions that would necessarily scream out at you as being something you'd want to get involved in. You know, it's a bit of a lot of people would see the League of Ireland as a basket case. So what drew you to this proposal?
Well, I was living in Northern Ireland, so it wasn't the League of Ireland per se. It was probably the Irish League more so, because I was living there.
Well, it's an even bigger basket case.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't use the phrase basket case. I would say the Northern Irish League, because of the fact that it's a much smaller geography, they have no overnights, they can run a smaller operation and remain solvent. They have less professionalism in that league compared to their southern counterparts. But the starting point of the project, or the goal of the project, wasn't just to create an all-in league. That's not the purpose of the project. The project's purpose is to create a football industry here that, like other leagues and nations around Europe have, like Denmark or Scotland, where the league can wipe its face in terms of its finances. The directors of the clubs aren't being asked for a dig out every quarter, and where the financial operations of the clubs can pay for their day-to-day, and that the league, most importantly, centrally generates enough commercial revenue to distribute to the clubs, where the whole thing is viable. So at the moment, you have this kind of unfortunate cycle where the clubs don't have enough money to contract their players longer term, and when they do have success in Europe, like Dundalk did in 2016, that English clubs and others can come in, and Scottish clubs can come in and just say, I'll have him and him, and thanks very much. So to use Dundalk's phrase, they didn't get so much as a bag of footballs for the likes of the guys in 2016 who did leave. So the whole purpose of the project is to create a more kind of virtuous cycle where the clubs have enough finances to hold on to players, go further in Europe, and be compensated properly for player departures.
All right, talk us through your proposal then. How would it work?
It started out with a Danish-style option where the top tier would be a 14-tier team club premiership, and below that would be a regionalised championship north and south, where the regionalisation isn't a function of the border, it's an imaginary line across the island that the league would redraw each year, like the National League north and south in England. So that was the proposal that we had been working towards, mainly because of the very successful Danish finances, how that league with 1 million less people compared to the island of Ireland manages to, and they also live under the shadow of the Premier League, but they still have over a TV deal in excess of 50 million euros a year. So that was very much an influence on our thinking. But as we went along, we got speaking to various people, and one in particular was this sports consultancy called, they're named Hypercube. They're based in the Netherlands. Their advice to us was not to marry ourselves to one model like we had been thinking, and to broaden the discussion because we might not have the right answers. So what they proposed was a more process-based approach where fans, players, coaches would be brought in and ask for their ideas. And only at the end of that process would we settle on the ideal format. So that's where we are now. So it would probably be remiss of me to talk through the details of the proposal that we had, given that we've shifted and broadened the discussion to include many more options.
Just but let's pretend I'm Ray Wilson of Shamrock Rovers, and you're selling your concept to me. So Ray Wilson being the major shareholder at the minute in Rovers, and you're selling the concept of this All-Ireland League to me. So at the minute, Rovers, give or take, a couple of million in turnover every year. They don't really make a profit. Some years they lose a few bob. Some years they make a few bob, you know, kind of over a period of time, probably balances itself out. So what's the financial benefit for me to join your proposal as opposed to doing, you know, what they're doing now and what they've been doing for the last, whatever, 70 odd years?
So I'm not going to put figures on it, but like it's been reported in the media, and we've said that the discussions we've had with broadcasters and sponsors have been very encouraging. And two broadcasters have expressed an interest to sit down and do a deal. And the ballpark ranges that they were giving us were far in excess of what either league enjoys at the moment. So So that's the first thing. The Hypercube process that they would like to implement would involve all the stakeholders speaking for, say, 2-3 months in this, I guess, wider discussion. And at the end, we would speak to the broadcasts and sponsors to determine what the market appetite was for this league. And only at the end would Rovers and other clubs be asked, do you want to go for this or not? So there are no leaps of faith in this process. We're not asking the clubs to join something that doesn't have guarantees or clarity around the figures. So, and we are basing everything on the assumption that the figures at the end of this process would have to justify Rovers moving across. So in terms of how much better they will be, it's hard for me to say at this moment. Obviously, it's difficult to put an agreement in writing with a sponsor or broadcaster, given that the league doesn't exist yet. But the indications are very positive from those discussions. We were originally proposing for the league to be live in 2021. Obviously, with the IFA's view at the moment, that's difficult. But, for example, sponsors who we'd spoken to about the idea love the fact that it would be 100 years since the league splitting up. It's a very nice story. And the broadcasters, the general feeling was that they wouldn't be talking to us if we were selling them the League of Ireland. This is something new that they feel that could really drive football.
What evidence is there that there will be increased attendances? Because we've had cross-border competitions in the past. More recently, the Setanta Cup, and we've had this Unite for Ireland sort of one-off between Dundalk and Linfield more recently. But the Setanta Cup had multiple teams and was group-based, and it went on over a sort of a long period during the season. And there really was very little evidence of increased attendances at those matches, and particularly the finals. I was at a couple of the finals and attendances were pretty poor.
I would say that the early years of the Setanta Cup were better. I think most people north and south of the border who've been at the game said it was something new and exciting. There was a real buzz around the games. I don't think an All-Ireland League is a silver bullet that will solve all the problems of Irish football north and south. And we've said all along that one part of it is government investment. And I think the government has a huge role to play in bringing these stadia up to standard. Because at the start of this process, I brought a group of friends. They would be Tip hurling fans. And we went down to Richmond Park for the first game of the season at home to Cork. And the guys after it were like, look, this is not for us. Like, it was raining on top of us. We were behind the goal, slipping on mud. The bathrooms were in very poor shape. So, like, the league is not going to hold on to this newly won fans for very long if the grounds aren't fit for purpose. So it's a two-pronged approach. But I do think the All-Ireland League taps into something that would bring that latent football support that doesn't normally go to the League of Ireland, would get their attention at least for a while.
You mentioned Denmark earlier. Denmark doesn't have a GA. Ireland's extraordinary in that sense, in that we have this indigenous sport, which is huge, and it's a very much a community base. It's in practically every parish on the island, yeah, whether it's north or south. And then, of course, we have rugby, and rugby has gained in popularity enormously. Now, I know the numbers in absolute numbers playing rugby are still small compared to soccer or compared to GAA, but nonetheless, it has gained in visibility and in popularity enormously over the last number of years. And of course, we have four professional squads operating on the island, playing at a very high level in Europe and so forth. So there are very unique circumstances at play in Ireland, not to mention the fact that obviously a lot of people are wedded to English football or to Celtic or Rangers, as the case may be in Scotland. There are very unique circumstances at play here in Ireland, and it's going to be very, very difficult to overcome them.
I totally agree. I think running a professional club north or south in football is one of the most difficult tasks in Western European sport, and I don't think that's hyperbole. Just because of what you said, you have this perfect storm of this brilliant indigenous product in the GAA that enjoys the political support and the local community support that football would otherwise enjoy probably in other countries. So that's a huge challenge. And I think rugby obviously is has gone on leaps and bounds so as well. So, but I think that's all the more reason to consolidate the two leagues and have a bigger league that has a better chance of being sustainable.
Now, what reaction have you had from the clubs, particularly north of the border? It might be an easier sell down here.
The clubs of north of the border have been fantastic. I spoke at Crusaders the week before last. To their credit, they give me a really good reception. They're very open-minded. Most people in Northern Ireland can perfectly compartmentalise their politics from their football. They're rational enough to realise that something needs to change in football for them also. And I would say that, you know, Northern Ireland, were it not for Michael O'Neill, or when he does leave, what will their future hold? So I think they recognise they need to secure the player pathway. And some of these clubs, like Linfield, I was at the opening game of the season. They had 1,500 people, 1,550, I think, at their first game at home in an 18,000-seater stadium. So they would, of course, benefit from bigger games. So the clubs have been hugely positive, I would say. Apart from a few clubs, the vast majority of them have been very supportive and willing to engage in this process that we're proposing.
Okay, so that's the clubs. What about the associations? We know that the FAI is in a complete state of flux. So I'm suspecting that right at the minute anyway, this isn't really high on their agenda. But the IFA have kind of made it very clear that they don't support this proposal.
So we spoke to the IFA and we went to them with what we call the Danish-style option that we had fleshed out in real detail. Since that meeting, we've broadened the discussion to include other options, including a Setanta Cup-style tournament, which I think, even though I don't personally think that it will be sufficient to transform the game, we still have to keep it on the table. Maybe that's the only option that the clubs will go for. But a third option is a split-season approach, where the first half of the season, the clubs would play home and away as they do now. UEFA places would be sorted. And then in the second half of the season, they would move to an All-Ireland League. Now, that would have the benefit over the Setanta Cup-style tournament of not being a fourth competition that the clubs are having to weave into their calendar, which was one of the challenges of the Setanta Cup. This would be their bread-and-butter league for the second half of the year at least. Since the IFA have come out against it, we've broadened that discussion. And our hope would be at the end of Hypercube's process, when they've ran all their models based on the data that we're gathering from the clubs, that we could go back to the IFA with evidence-based solutions to their concerns.
What about the FAI then?
They're very, very open to the project. I've spoken to some of the current board members also, and I think there's support for the idea. I think the main challenge at the moment is the IFA's concerns around it, but the FAI have been open and supportive, I would say.
Did you meet John Delaney? Did you get to talk to him?
I've never met John Delaney, no. I did reach out to him once or twice, and I was put in touch then with Fran Gavin when I originally thought of this idea, but I never had the opportunity to meet him, no.
Right. Tell us about Kieran Lucid, because you're from Kerry, which is most certainly not a soccer stronghold. No League of Ireland team. I don't think anybody from Kerry's ever been capped at senior level for the Republic of Ireland.
I think Andy Townsend's grandmother was from Kerry.
Is that right?
That was our biggest contribution to Irish football I know. But it's a bit of a black spot in League of Ireland coverage, shall we say. But no, I'm a huge football fan. I was a United fan since I was seven or so. And then I moved to England. And it's when I moved back to the North that I think I'd, maybe it was because Man United, their fortunes were declining, but I started to become a little bit disillusioned with English soccer. Probably maybe because of the salaries, maybe because of the kind of mercenary nature. Even, it's not just Irish representation, even say the class of 92, that was still a very beautiful thing. And when you watch old footage and old interviews with, you know, Gary Neville and Nicky Butt, there's something very real about it. Whereas now it just seems hired hands and they'll go for the highest bidder. Now that's very preachy and kind of Luddite of me, but I think the league here has a chance, and if you look at someone like Denmark, to be something still very local, it's still majority local players, and that can be a real engine for economic activity for the local community. So I came at it from a love of football as opposed to a love of the League of Ireland. And I think, you know, people said, you know, he's not a League of Ireland man, can he really be trusted? But I think coming at it from a good place and from the outside isn't a bad thing. Sometimes the reception to the idea has been guardedly positive, I would say. People obviously want to see what we're about. And so the group that we've put together, we're a group of advocates. We will never hope to make any money out of this. This is just a purely labour of love. And I think, you know, it could be very good for the game if it were to come about.
So what's the day job?
So I'm a data scientist, and the company, the reason I moved to Northern Ireland is I sold a company to First Derivatives, who are based in Northern Ireland. So that's my background. At the moment, Irish football is a rather demanding mistress, and I think it's drifted into a day job for me. But I have a couple of kind of, I've invested in another company, and I work with them a little, and I have a few irons in the fire outside of football. But I think football is probably taking up 70-80% of my time at the moment because it's such a high-profile project and I think it has a chance. I wouldn't want to look back and say that I didn't give it everything I could.
So are you a millionaire?
I guess you could say that, yeah.
Right, okay.
Now, on paper, but I think there are farmers from my local village at home who would exceed my wealth. They just, didn't have the misfortune of being published in the Irish Times when I did sell the company, but it's modest enough, to be honest. It's not like, yeah, it's I wouldn't have that much play money. This is, it just gives me a little bit of independence to pursue this, but I'll probably in the next year or two I'll have to get real a little bit and probably go back to some form of day job, I think.
Okay, how are you funding it today? Because obviously,
well, there's not, like, I'm not putting a lot of personal, there's not much money required in it. Like, obviously Hypercube have to be compensated and some costs, but it's more time than actual funds that I'm putting into this.
Okay, so what's the next step for you? The IFA are opposing it at the minute, at least. So where do you go from here?
So what Hypercube are a statistics and mathematical model driven firm, and they require data. So what we're doing is getting the club's finances and attendance data and getting that over to Hypercube to run the models, run the various permutations of what form of league could be brought about. And they would be able to make a reasonably accurate estimation if you run with this format, this is what you can expect in terms of finances and attendances. And so that's where our focus right now. So we don't want to just be a group who are talking in high-level platitudes for too long. We want to actually go away and get something substantial that we can then come up with. Probably that would be probably February, March time at this stage, I would say.
Let's say it gets off the ground. Go back to my Ray Wilson question. A couple of million turnover at the minute. Look out 5 years, 6, 7 years, let's say. What might it be, potentially? What could it be? 5 million? 10 million? 8 million?
Well, the league company in the SPFL runs about 37.7 million sterling a year. And they distribute to the clubs, I forget the figure, maybe 26 million sterling. I would say if you were at about a quarter of that, up around 8 million a year, I think that wouldn't be bad in 5 years after the league is up and running. It's all about the direction of movement. The league has to be moving towards Scotland and Denmark. At the moment, it's not. It's not tapping into the transfer market at all. It's not tapping into its fair share of European prize money. That, we'll say 6.6 million, 7 million almost, that Dundalk made in 2016 has now reverted back to less than 2 million. So that 5 million opportunity cost, that's one place, one of the four places. That's huge. And that European prize money is the lifeblood of leagues around Europe, but it's not flowing into our leagues. So I think, to answer your question, it all depends if the government get behind this league with infrastructure. And I think if they do, I think a third or so of Scottish revenues within, say, 6, 7 years is definitely achievable.
Well, Kieran, we wish you the best of luck with it. It's an ambitious proposal, no question about that. And you will have a lot of naysayers, I've no doubt. There will be a lot of supporters as well. And you've got a fair bit of opposition to overcome, it sounds, north of the border before this will see the light of day. But we wish you luck with it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, that's it for this week from Inside Business. And in fact, that's it for us at this side of Christmas. My thanks to Peter Hamilton and Kieran Lucid. Declan Conlon produced the show with JJ Vernon as sound engineer. Remember, you can get the latest business news straight into your inbox by signing up to our Business Today email at irishtimes.com. And you can also follow the Irish Times business feed on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn each day, even over Christmas. I'm Kieran Hancock. Until next time, take care and have a very happy Christmas.